When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Everybody, welcome to episode, 184, Red Wings Rant, where tirades into passion pleas for your Detroit Red Wings finally have a home. Mike, today we're celebrating another huge win. We didn't go 5 out of 5, we went 4 out of 5, but that's still fun. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about, I guess what I promised on the last recording, that is there potential for the Red Wings to still find some scoring? Like, are we overperforming, or is there still that chance, that things could actually maybe stay the same or even get better, considering some of the names that are going to be on the list that we'll talk about today. And then we'll kind of prep for this upcoming week. We've got Columbus and Dallas. So, Mike, you were a big jinx on Thursday. You went to the Capitals game, and it was a stinker for, I would say, 40 minutes.
I took my lady's dad to his first time at Little Caesars Arena. This was
my lady's dad. Okay, yeah, I did that math.
So this was his first live Red Wing experience.
In no lady? Mood. Just you?
Becky was there, too. She was there, too. He could not have seen a worse Red Wing game this season. And I'm including the games where we got just bare butt spanked, on the way to like losing 5-1 or, whatever. This 2-0 game was excruciating. We had nothing to root for. Nothing. There was nothing to root for. We had nothing to cheer for. I think there was one fight kind of with like 5 minutes to go where it wasn't even one of those good frustration fights where you just start throwing fists because it's over,
Yeah.
They just kind of held jerseys and tussled for a little bit, and we didn't get anything out of it. But there's a standing ovation for the worst fight you've ever seen. It was like an NBA fight. That's how bad it was.
So here's the scary thing. We had such a great – this part's not scary. We had such a great first 10 minutes that we still ended up being the positive for expected goals for percentage. So we still ended up having better chances because of the first 10 minutes of that game than the Capitals would actually get the rest of the game. That's because they just played a trap for the next 50 minutes because
they took the lead. Yeah. And they just stopped trying to score. It was over. They just put five guys behind their own blue line and just turtled around the net, and there's nothing to do.
I heard the argument last night while I was at the game. Daniela Bruce arguing with Art Regner about goaltending and having to play rookie goaltenders, and I think that story for the Capitals game is like twofold for what was it for Cal? He played great those first 10 minutes, which is all they needed, because by that time the Capitals had their lead and they, like you said, Mike, just played shutdown and lined up at the blue line and were like, try and get through this. This is, Red Rover pretty much for the rest of the game.
They didn't send more than two skaters on a rush.
Yeah.
There was always three guys back on the red line. But man, I do want to bring up one of our favorite segments here. And it can either be just something that you hear others say, or it could be a dumb thought that you want to say. And it's when you're at a live hockey game and it's the dumbest commentary from fans. Because the Capitals, you know, just hunkered down and they stopped playing offense. So there was, you know, they just funneled us, you know, along the boards. There's no shots over there unless you're Dylan Larkin against the Canadiens. But my favorite thing and least favorite thing is people kept going, just shoot it. Why aren't they shooting it? And there's no angle. There's five human bodies between them and the net. There's nothing. There's no opportunity. If you just shoot it, you're just hitting meat. There's no nets, just meat. 3 to 4 men's worth of meat. There's no pucks getting through the net. Matt, I hate when they say just shoot it, as if the Red Wings are looking up like it's Price is Right. What do I do? What do I do? Just shoot it. I don't know, man. Pass it. Oh, and everybody hates their guess. Matt, it could be a dumb thought that you have that you say out loud, or you know, something that you hear the fans say at a live sporting event here for hockey. You have one up there with just shoot it. Why aren't they shooting it?
I mean, that to me is one of the worst. I have one up there. Like it's one of those things. I've carried it along with me, and it was one game we took our mutual friend, our buddy, to a few years back, and there's a rather large human behind us that was at the top of their lungs just going, shoot it! And we carried that with us. We've been doing that impression ever since. I'd say that's about 10 years old at this point. But the entire game, she was just belting that out, just shoot it! And it's so asinine because, like, the Capitals were just blocking every shooting lane. So what are you doing? You want him to just fire at the guy right in front of him, and then the puck starts going the other way? Yeah, what a great plan that is.
I can understand if we were playing NHL 94 and you could shoot pucks into the players' faces and they'd get injured, so then they'd run out of players, and then you could go up. God, I had another really good one, too.
Here, well, real quick, we actually have our buddy.
We have a contender?
Chris, he went to the Calgary game, so he feels getting shut out.
Yeah, that's awful, man.
Brad, those games are frustrating for everyone. Performance Art here. What's up, buddy? He's just about to drive back from his cottage, so he's going to catch the rest of the show later, but good to have you. All right, Podcast by George. What's going on? First time I think I've seen this name in our comments. Red Wings doing well because the injury list is shorter than most other teams
now.
Good enough to make playoffs.
Get that
P word
out of here.
Not much more.
P word out of here.
Yeah, we made a rule. Red Wings had to win all five the last five games for us to talk about playoffs. But we have decided as a show we aren't allowed to mention it unless it's past Thanksgiving and we have a juicy spot in the standings, which it's something, Mike, you don't really want to drag Red Wings fans down right now. But if you look at the points percentage and not where we are in the standings. Oh, boy.
I always like looking at goal differential, too. And even with our positive record, we're in kind of a rough spot. Eric, what up, man?
Where were we? So things I hate at hockey games. I think the other thing, too, is just the assumption that every single penalty against your team isn't a penalty, especially from like up the upper deck, and you're just like, oh, come on, that's bullshit.
I got one more for you, too.
Yeah.
When they got frustrated Thursday night, they were saying, well, just hit somebody.
Okay.
So I just started yelling, just take an interference penalty. Come on. Take a cross-check penalty. Boo! So there's a few like smart fans who are sitting near me that laugh. But
That's funny that you mentioned that, because I was going to bring up we're facing the Golden Knights this week. And I'm thinking about bringing Dave on. He's another member of the Hockey Podcast Network, but he's actually from Detroit. So he's a huge Red Wings fan. Yeah. He just made a huge list for all Vegas Golden Knights fans. Because he feels that they still don't understand hockey. And all of these things you're talking about are on that list.
Just hit somebody.
Yes. So he explained in detail of, you know, the penalty that would take place if all of the things that Golden Knights fans yelled for actually happened. And it's just it was funny to me because while I was reading it, I was like, I'm not putting Dave down at all for doing that because it's not even a Golden Knights thing. It's across the board, I think, for NHL fans.
Yeah, but we're in Hockey Town. Come on, guys. Let's play the rules a little bit. Yeah.
It's just that difference between like the people that will go to a hockey game aren't necessarily the people that watch it at home. Right, like those are the diehards. Those are the people who do watch it at home. The people who you said you took your significant other's dad. I almost said husband, dad, to the game. Right, he's probably not watching every Red Wings game because that's an experience. That's like right.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. Nobody gives a shit. I don't need to explain this anyway. Eric, good morning, my man. Fethdar, morning. What's going on?
Fethdar, my dude. How you doing?
He had his head down. Okay, so why not just hospitalize him for life? This is one coming from George. we got to point this one out. He pulled over for this comment. Fabry should be benched. If you're not knocked out, you make a play for the puck.
Whew. Oh, on that centering play?
Montreal
time goal?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. You got it. He went in hard to the boards, and I think what he thought was he was going to play it up to get the play stopped, but he did still go. He did still hit the locker room after that, but he was out for maybe 2 minutes, and then he came back out to the bench. I don't know what really happened there, so I don't want to tell. I don't want to make a comment about Fabry being hurt or not being hurt, but
that might be a tough one.
Like it hurt.
I do want to make one correction to my statement earlier that we had nothing to root for. We had so little to root for that the only times we got excited were when Fabry was stick handling across the red line and almost got it into the zone, and then they would immediately crush him with 5 Capitals worth of humanity. But there's a few times he almost got through, so that's when we got excited.
And Brad points out Fabs was laughing, if you watch, with a what the hell kind of expression. Like,
yeah, I don't know if he was laughing or he was just concussed and his body was doing that thing. Like when you go to the dentist and get too much Novocaine and you're just, ha 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 ha.
I think he was
just broken. I think he got whack-a-mole and he didn't know what to do.
I think he was laughing like, what the, what's going on? Why? You know what I mean? Like, he's like, what do we have to do to stop the play anymore? Clearly, like, this was a game that the refs did not give. I forgot. We need to try to cut back on our language here. They did not give an F.
They didn't give a fudge. A fudge and two.
About Dylan Larkin or Jake Allen, who actually left the game because of the hit. Or I should say the shove, the blatant shove from behind by Petrie yesterday. So there was a lot that the refs I thought could fix. I will say this, Mike. I did want to bring this up being at the game. I've never seen the pregame ritual for a group of referees. Mike, they got in a circle before the game, which is very normal.
Oh, cool.
But they had a team handshake.
Ref team handshake?
Yeah, it was
do you remember it, Kat? Can you back up a step?
Yeah, do you know Community with Troy and Abed in the morning?
Yeah.
Where they would do you hit your chest and you also do a high five with your buddy and then you bring it in as a bring them in for like a
you're just off camera on that one, but it's like this. Yeah.
Oh, wait.
There you go.
There we go. Yeah. So it's like they all, so 4 guys in a row, bam, bam. And they all knew which hand to hit while they were doing that too. It was, you know, screw the refs last night for not doing anything on that Petrie shove, but I thought that was kind of cute. No refs. Not only would they have that time set aside to make sure they had a handshake, but it wasn't just like a fist bump. Like they had it ready to go. They were organized.
Can I say that makes me a little uncomfortable? Because at least they did it before the game, but I could see it if they like called a penalty in the third period for like a DraftKings sporting line, you know, and then they're all like, you know, kind of help get that extra $100. Oh my God. Yeah. Salty wingspan. That Larkin goal. I don't know. I don't even know how you get it in there. I don't think that would ever go in like NHL 2K22. Like, no way.
Yeah, that's two impossible angles last night. It's just Moltenbu was not.
Did you get to hear Ken Daniels in the aftermath?
No.
Larkin scores on an impossible angle. Well, I guess not impossible. It was really cute.
I do think it's like there's another conversation that I think we've had like every episode now is just like how this team lives and dies with Dylan Larkin. I think absolutely Tyler Bertuzzi's having a great season, but the motor that's driving everything, like it is Dylan Larkin. Like what a pick for the captain. Like this, he just never stops.
Yeah,
and it's so cute too to watch Lucas Raymond fall in love with him.
Can I say too, like Larkin on the overtime winner? I love that his priority was still to get Raymond the goal. You know what I mean? And it just happened that, you know, his play kind of got botched, and then you know the puck made its way back over to Dylan. But his priority was still to get the kid, you know, the overtime winner.
Yeah, I don't know what Moltenbu was doing last night. Like, that's the difference, right? When we talk about we've had to face two rookie goaltenders, and then Sam gets mixed in there as, like, another tough goaltender situation for our opponent. Because you have to, like, game plan for it, right? Because you're pretty much saying either with the rookie goaltenders going in, you're going to play back, you're going to stay in your defensive zone and make that your priority so your goaltender doesn't get embarrassed. And then for Montreal, like their situation is we have a guy going in that wasn't even supposed to be playing tonight. You know, wasn't even supposed to be here today. Classic from Clerks. Like now you've got to rally around a goaltender who had a very quick and ugly start to that second period for him where he just let us right back in the game. And Montreal had to rally and kind of play. And this is kind of where I wanted to take this conversation and bring it up the Capitals. Play the game that the Capitals played for 50 minutes against us on Thursday. Montreal played that game for the last 20 minutes. But after we took the lead, they pretty much tried to emulate exactly what Washington did to, like, all right, we got to stop this. And the problem with me seeing that two games in a row and it working quite well is how scary it's going to be for Detroit now that it looks like there's a playbook being written. If you take the lead on Detroit, you do this, and they do not have the talent to overcome your trap. Now, Dylan perseveres, right? Like but you only have one Dylan. Lucas Raymond probably has the talent, but if you're putting your best defensive line on your first line or going up against Larkin, Bertuzzi, and Raymond, you've really just got to cross your fingers on everything else because I think, again, we saw the rest of the game, especially that third period. It just looked like nothing. I mean, we couldn't get a solid shot going at the net for that entire third period.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. So, like, one thing that, like, when you're setting up an NBA defense, like an almost unguardable play, and it's, you'll see it just run ad nauseum if there's a certain, like, matchup you can get with it, is a pick and roll where you end up, you know, like, guards always guard, like, defend guards, centers always guard centers. So if you do the pick and roll, suddenly a slow center is guarding a point guard or a little guy is guarding a giant center, and then you try and exploit the matchup that way. What – how do you, like, overcome the trap, especially on the road where you don't have the – that line change advantage?
Well, you got to think about, like, the speed of a team like Edmonton. Like, how does Edmonton come back, like, down four or five goals? And it's, you got to have a power play that takes advantage of those power plays every time, which we do not have a power play like that where you can try and play catch up. But ultimately you're either hoping to stick handle your way through, or you come right back to that speed, and you've got to dump the puck and try and get a couple of wins there. And if you're not doing that, you've really set yourself up to just, like, it's just, God, it's worse than clockwork. Cause it grinds your teeth. You're just watching the time click away. And, you know, ultimately, again, what we saw was Washington and Montreal just all blocking the shooting lanes. They had zero interest in carrying the puck down the ice. I think with Washington, they said we can hold this 2-0 lead. With Montreal, I think they forgot that overtime was probably going to lean in our favor with our talent load compared to theirs, especially on the top end. So that's where we could get the win. But yeah, Montreal was playing to just get to overtime. And I think when you have a team that's just fine with that, that's where it feels almost impossible. But yeah, it's something where you go back to the 90s and you see the New Jersey Devils pretty much won cups because of that. So it's just, you try to, you know, come up with an answer of how to do it. Well, we had literally decades of teams still struggling, and now it's still a defensive strategy, like a go-to for a team with a lead against a team like ours, because it's proven. It really is that tough to figure out. And, you know, last night you'd see Fabry get into the zone, and he is completely blanketed by two or three Canadiens players, you know, on the offensive zone. And what they're doing is just trying to break up that that flow, right? So it's not where Fabry can just come in and he knows he's got a play set up across the ice, or he knows he's got somebody coming in behind us. Yeah. Everything's gone to hell. So they have to improvise. And what you're missing there are the guys that, you know, like where we've seen Lucas Raymond be able to improvise already and find goals. Watch like Moritz Seider dangling the puck, you know, like on the power play, and the way that he moves, you know, his body and protects the puck. Like, that kind of thing is not happening anywhere else on the ice except for Larkin. Bertuzzi, definitely. Lucas Raymond, 1,000%, and Moritz Seider. And the rest of these guys are...
I have a surprising name I want to include, too.
Yeah, they're charging headfirst, and there doesn't seem to be an adjustment being made. And some of that probably could be pointed towards coaching, but you and I have had the same conversation over and over since the show started. A lot of it goes back to talent, and... you know, sometimes it gets exposed with that type of strategy and just feeling like we're hopeless or helpless at that point. Once that gets implemented,
I think like the more we keep watching Yzerman just repeatedly draft players for size, it kind of feels like he's reacting to watching games like this, because, you know, I mentioned on Thursday, one of the few rooting interests we had, and they were really hollow like points in the game, was Fabry, because he's a talented stick handler, but it was like the Capitals were inviting that to happen because they knew that he's not a huge guy, so he can, you know, make a little bit of progress across the line, but he's not going to get to a point where you're getting like a high danger scoring chance or anything like that. So they were inviting him, please take the puck, waste about 15, 20 seconds. We'll take it back from you, and then we'll just push it back down the ice, you know, and comfortably, you know, keep protecting this lead. And so that was the one spot where one guy we've given a lot of grief to this year, and he still has been, you know, pretty cold on the, you know, goal and assist tally sheets. But he had a few plays against Montreal, and he definitely had a few plays in my game against Washington, was Rasmussen. Yeah. And that's because he is so big. He was actually one of the guys that are like, ah, damn it. Like, the few times that he could get some, you know, a few stick handling opportunities, he just used that big body and the reach, and it actually did work to his advantage. So I know we give him grief because his skating's not great, and that's probably why he wasn't able to capitalize against the Capitals. But those they were still, like, quality spots, and it felt like those were, like, shifts, line shifts in the game where it was, you know, at least it looked like we had a shot to maybe at least, you know, get something, you know, on net. Some, you know, just shoot it! Like an actual opportunity, you know, worth something was Rasmussen. That's where he had a few shining moments.
Yeah, one other thing, I'll say for Rasmussen, I thought I saw him try that a couple of times last night, but he still got overwhelmed, and it turned into, you know, he gets around one guy, there's another guy face, you know, that he's actually skating towards as well. So it just became one of those things where Montreal had their game in mind, and it was, you know, let them throw a puck at the net every now and then, but they're not getting a second chance, and the first chance isn't going to be good. And, you know, I tweeted in that Capitals game, and what's funny is this should be a celebration, but I did see so much that scared me in these last two games. that I'm worried, you know, as we've all tried to predict, like, the downfall, you know, like the losing streak, this is where it starts. Like it really did look like we're seeing, like, this is how you can really shut down the Red Wings. And I mentioned to you were talking about Fabry being one of the best players for that Capitals game. And I said, he's skating really hard, but I hate his first decision coming in. And I did want to point out, podcast by George throws out there, we're playing quickly and taking some risk by making immediate passes that are semi-blind. You know what? I'd go as far as to say a lot of them are just super blind. And we're trying to, like, it's like an overthink, right? It's there's going to be a guy here. And sometimes it is just better to keep your head up, telegraph the pass, and find the one that's actually going to work. Because when they keep doing this, and I was talking about Fabry's first decision, once he did skate hard, he would enter the zone. But that first decision he made was absolute trash, and it would just turn into a turnover, and then the puck was going the other way against the Capitals, where I think there was a better decision to, you know, find some open space first. Because if everybody's going to be down low, maybe at some point we just have to say, all right, let's cut our losses. Maybe we just don't want to immediately turn the puck over, but we can get the puck back to the blue line and try and set something up.
There was a lot of frustration on our part too, because it felt like we could just not get anything in front of the goalie. So we would kind of just, you know, run somebody up the boards, and then they would just, like, that blind pass. Can you put the comment back up there?
Yeah.
George, sorry. Thank you, George. Then those blind passes you're calling out. Yeah, it was just frustration, right? So they would just take it up the boards and then just try to put it somewhere in the middle. There was either not a Red Wing there, or there wasn't anybody in position, or we were, like, outnumbered, you know, with three Capitals just hanging out in the middle, not concerned about, like, again, going out on the attack. But yeah, it was like they didn't know what else to do, and it just kind of looked like one of those God, like pinball wizard moments where there was just nothing. There's nothing there. So they were just trying to, I don't know, get some. They're almost like they're trying to do like a desperation shot and just hope it ping pongs off of somebody. But it was really unwatchable hockey.
Can we talk about too? Like we've seen the tenacious play, you know, like is the word I keep using so far this season for the Wingdings, and you're throwing out the word frustrated. And I feel like that Capitals game was the first time, and then we saw it again against Montreal, where that kind of, it disappeared. And it was just kind of like, you know, I talked earlier, it felt like we were running down the clock. And Montreal, you know, part of their strategy was to get to overtime. For Washington, it was to hold on to that 2-0 lead. But it really did, like, look like we lost that fire, where it was just like, you know, go head first front of the net. And because of the defensive play, keeping everybody to the outside, we just didn't it didn't feel like we had that fire. And, you know, that could be more or less a result of what the game plan actually was by our opponent, and they made it look like the fire was gone. But I think it's probably worth mentioning that this is a team that if things don't go their way for, I mean, we're talking for that Washington game for 50 minutes. But if things don't go their way for a considerable amount of time and they can get stymied just trying to enter the zone or keep the possession long enough to set up a juicy scoring chance, it just kind of feels like they're not giving up. They're not just turning in the game, but it feels like they're just trying to get through. Maybe let's get to the end of this period and try and reload. And if the Capitals come as hard as they do, you know, as they did in the second period, and it turns into the same thing in the third period, it is. It's just mounting frustration. Coupled
with
a
game,
fantastic,
you know,
game plan. And
I was kind of bummed because I wanted to see a little out of because these are those type of games. Those are the ones where you know, the first rush. Like the first rush doesn't work. And that's where I thought, oh, maybe this would be a spot where Ernie can step up, because he's usually, you know, he's usually good for those where second and third efforts.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Capitals, you know, kind of shut him down, and he didn't really have much of an impact in that game. But I'm kind of interested though, because it's definitely something I think Ken Cal was talking about too, because we were listening to the aftermath on Thursday. Was just, you know, it's a really smart road team strategy. you get a lead and you just kind of sit back. You don't want to take a lot of risks. Just try and get a point, you know, maybe 2 points if you play good enough defense. And so the Red Wings having this big road trip coming up, I'm kind of curious to see if they, obviously our first line is still the razzle dazzle, you know, Blashill's still going to tell them, you know, go score and, you know, do whatever you can in the offensive zone. But I'm curious to see if we're going to start like incorporating that strategy a little bit more. I know we, feels like we definitely turned that off because I know we tried it a lot last year just to get some points in the standings, you know, because we had such a lack of talent and so many injuries. Yeah, I'm curious with this longer stretch of road games if we're going to try that.
Well, yeah, it's going to be huge with our opponent now being on the road here for what, four straight games. We got Blue Jackets, mm-hmm. Stars, Golden Knights, and Coyotes. They'll be able to make the choice. I mean, not that we have to worry about the Coyotes, but they'll be able to make that choice is what they're going to do with that first line, and the Red Wings will have to hope for some secondary scoring again, which is kind of been, you know, all season. I've just been talking about eventually the secondary scoring's going to pop up, right? Eventually it's going to come around. Mike, can you believe it? DraftKings is recognizing our favorite sport. We do a podcast about hockey, and we are finally able to discuss the fact that they're an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Let's go, right?
That's what I'm ready to say. Matt, I've had enough talking about the other sports. Stuff for big boy sport. The NHL. That's National Hockey League. That season is underway. DraftKings Sportsbook, an unofficial sports betting partner of the National Hockey League, has an unbelievable offer to celebrate the greatest sport on ice, nay, the greatest sport on earth. New customers can bet just $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. Doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper. Oh, gotta be a, or a slapper, maybe, or a deft deflection. However they light the lamp, you win. Sports.
What if it's some nasty sauce? All right, go.
What if it's an empty netter? Still counts on the stat sheet, my man. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN. Throw down $1 on any NHL game and win 100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. This week, one puck in the net nets you a big win with promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required, one per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. We did get a Pew Suter goal, which was, out of everything we scored last night, was our best-looking goal, right? I want everybody to go back. Now, I mentioned on our last podcast episode, you remember I talked about Tyler Bertuzzi getting in the way of the ref while he was trying to see if the puck got past Greiss or Nedeljkovic.
Yeah.
And it gave the Red Wings that extra chance for I can't remember who the goaltender was, but to cover up the puck, right?
Yeah.
The puck didn't actually go in, but Bert doesn't know that. So that Pew Suter goal, watch the replay. Bertuzzi is on the end of the bench, so he's closest to the play going on. Pew scores the goal. He turns around and looks at Bertuzzi and is like, "You called it." Mark Stahl. And the big group hug looks at Tyler Bertuzzi and says, "Fucking nail!" Oh, there it is. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm trying to cut back on the swear.
I'm going to blame Mark Stahl for that one.
Yeah, you nailed it. Something that Tyler Bertuzzi is doing again is helping. I mean, it's pucks in the back of the net or saving us from a goal. But clearly, Tyler's on like another level right now. Like his headspace, it's just like. Everything's clear this year for Tyler. If it's, you know, you want to look at the shooting percentage or, the amount of times that he's just been able to pick his spot and like go right to the net and score. But now it's these super aware, you know, like the hyper aware veteran plays where he not only is saving a goal, potentially the last game or two, I don't know, that was 3 games ago at this point, or It's apparently giving Pew Suter some coaching advice before that play even started, of going like, Mo Tembo is weak, you know, over the shoulder, you know, go here from this point and it's going in, to the point where both Pew Suter and Mark Stahl turn back and look at Tyler Bertuzzi after that goal and are like, you nailed it. Like, that was something I caught last night. I think that might be one of the things, because I'm at the game, like, you get to see that, because I tried to find the replay over and over. I think you just have to watch the whole game to actually see that conversation happen. But yeah, being able to see that, and like, Bertuzzi is laughing so hard. Like, he knows that he nailed something. Like, whatever, yeah, whatever that call was, it was a beaut. And yeah, it's just something fun. I thought, I noticed that. I just, you know, you got to give the nod in different places, because you see the struggles with the second line, and I don't know if it's just something where do we just have three guys on that second line where the clearly there's some chemistry, right? Because it's one of the strongest second lines in the league from the expected goals perspective.
Yeah, I don't like that's there, that but, second line. It's not. I don't think it's their fault. It's just a depth issue. They would be a fantastic, incredible third line, but I think second line just depends on the talent level of the other team that we're playing. That it's not their fault, you know. Just some guys are better at hockey, so I think that's when they struggle, is when they face a team with a really good second line. So it's not like Pius is terrible. He's got skill. I just don't think he's like an elite second line center, and I, you know, feel comfortable saying that. That's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that brings up a couple of points I saw in the comments. Michael Scripp was bringing up, worries me most is, besides Bergeron and Valeno, where's the help at forward coming down the road? And, you know, a lot of that can be worked out, because we're talking about, right, like, if you want to compare first lines across the league.
We got that. Yeah,
you have a top 10 first line. You can't really do much better than that. So you could say, you know, maybe you don't trust it long term, so you want to upgrade maybe a center spot there. We definitely don't have that. We don't have the center to replace. If you're someday hoping Dylan Larkin goes down to 2C, and you know, you could go either way on that. Like, this year he looks like a 1C. So I don't care what anybody says. He does look like a 1C this year. But if you're looking to just find that depth, I think you can hopefully pull back a little bit on having it need to come from, you know, your own system, your own pool of prospects. But it is true. Like, that statement by Mike is legit. It is scary looking down, you know, going through that prospect pool and trying to find where the offense is going to come from. Because even with a Soderblom, if you guys keep an eye on the SHL, who had a little bit of a point streak there, a little bit of a point streak in the SHL does not translate to an offensive juggernaut in the NHL. It's just the realistic way of looking at it. Like, sure, he's had some good stints there, but, you know, you can't depend on it. Niederbach, Dauer Nilsson, you know, those are some names that were drafted late. Or actually, you know what, Niederbach was a second rounder. But, you know, those are some not first round picks, I should say. That could eventually turn out. I think it's just patience. And if we're talking about competing in the next couple of years, those guys are probably still 3 years down the line. All those names I mentioned. So it would mean that we're going outside of our own pool, I mean, to fill out
that's
roster.
That's where we always get in those talks where we get, you know, a little too excited about Pettersson being available as a restricted free agent and saying, just go all in, because it's not even the fault of Yzerman. Like, oh, why can't he find a top line center? You know what I mean? Drafting sixth and below. I mean, there's only so many of those guys in the world. So, yeah, that's where maybe, you know, as Yzerman kind of sees, you know, it looks like our defense is kind of growing at a really strong rate. I feel like we do have a little bit of depth on this team. And it's just, we're like one or two elite level guys from, you know, maybe we got something cooking here.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, I guess it's tough to, like, where's the next place you want to take the conversation for that, because it really just kind of comes back to patience and maybe,
I mean, like, you know, look at our other teams, right? I mean, we're not going to start with baseball. That's too many guys. But like the Pistons, it's so wildly different, you know, for them to be drafting somebody like Sekou Doumbouya, who he's already on his fourth team since we got rid of him, you know, down in the teens, you know, like for first round picks. Or, my God, you win the lottery and things look wildly different just because you added somebody who's, you know, top three good, as opposed to somebody who's top, you know, 15 or 20 good in the first round. So it's, you know, same thing with hockey. It's kind of, you know, we've had bad luck, so we're going to have to figure out some other way to do this.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's something too, where at least across the league, like I'm pulling up elite prospects. So EP Ringside actually has us ranked as the number two prospect pool. Now, again, that's...
Does that include Raymond and Bertuzzi? Cider.
Yeah. So I was going to say, it's pretty top heavy. I think you do see two NHL players.
I mean, they hit on two of them. That is... Right. That's really tough to do. But we still need a centerman.
So here's the problem. Number three on this list, I'll say this. So I'm just pulling this up. We can all... we'll go through this list together as a team. Number one, Cider. Number two, Raymond. Number three, Mike... Nedeljkovic. All right, so now we're really cheating. Number four, Edvinson, which again, I would say that one is 1 to 2 years away, right? Like Edvinson is going, I wouldn't be surprised if he was here next year helping out the left side. But then we've got Albert Johansson is after that, so another defenseman. And then, as previously mentioned, Jonathan Berggren.
Oh, I want Soderblom up there.
We still don't have anybody that we're not like 100% aware of or have already mentioned on the show until we finally reach number seven. I guess we have mentioned him, but you know, Niederbach, number seven on this list. And to be honest, if you take a look at what EP Rinkside is ranking him, he's average across the board. So he's our second best guy.
Love it.
Right, exactly. First guy that hadn't been mentioned in the comments. So it's something of it's legit concern, right? Like we should be looking at this and just going, all right, well, if it's about building this team out with some more forwards with the draft, then maybe you say, hey, you know, maybe we can compete next year a little bit better. But we're still 2 or 3 years away from having that core Stanley Cup team that is going to be taking us deep for years. I mean, as I continue through this list, Kosa's next at number nine. Bouillon is at number 10. And yeah, there's Wallander, another defenseman. Jesus Christ. Yeah, just there's a lot of defensemen here, Mike. So we're clearly Yzerman's and I don't think, you know, we're not sitting here going like we broke the code, Mike. Yzerman was trying to build a defense first. But no, we're still seeing guys on this list that are Holland draft picks, but clearly number one on the priority list, Mike, defense. And then we'll figure out how we're going to score goals.
The other thing too, I don't think it's just that it was defense. I think it's also because of how Yzerman keeps getting screwed in the lottery. He's also just kind of, guy is a defenseman.
Has he gotten screwed, though? Because so far...
No, I mean, like, position-wise, right? Where we're not able to get, like, a Tim Stützle. Okay, that's a bad example because it was...
Right,
you know,
like,
Brandon,
he's nailed it so far. Like, I would say 100% I'm really happy with what's happened regardless of our ranking. I think it's just...
Let me edit my statement. At a point where he can draft a strong wing or defenseman, but the centers are usually the first couple picks.
Okay.
Can we make that?
I know you could probably take that into this next draft too, because I don't know. There's a lot of centers, but even like a Lambert's coming down the list in regards to a ranking. We even talked about how Corey Brownman was like, I'm not so sure about Shane Wright anymore. And it's just like, what? What do you mean? He was guaranteed to be the next.
This is the lottery we win.
No, it's still so like that's one guy. Like elite prospects is still like, nope, Shane Wright, legit. You pick him up, you're good.
Yeah.
It's just that I think the more I read about Shane Wright, the more it comes, it keeps coming back around to like leadership. Where I think we might be in the realm of wanting to find just the as high skill as possible.
Yeah.
Can I
keep up with
fine?
Verana? How about that?
Huh?
Can you keep up with Verana? That's your job.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, that's another point too. Like we're weak in the pool, but we're also missing arguably, before the season started, you would have said our second best forward, right? You would have said, or number, or top two, you know, Larkin and Verana would have been.
Second most talented scorer.
Oh, Tristan coming in. Oh, there he is.
Coming in hot.
Rutger McGroarty, we've mentioned it before, the best name, I think the best hockey name of all time. Now, he did just commit to Michigan, so you're not going to be seeing a McGroarty appearance for a while, but goddamn that name.
Whew. I know, it sounds just, like a...
Isn't that a hockey name, Rutger? Oh my gosh, I love him so much. But yeah, Michigan commit, so you got to figure... How about Michigan hockey? Good gravy. Like, killing it in the last draft, and now they're it's just turning into this system now where these top prospects coming out of junior leagues and what have you are just like, yeah, I'll go to Michigan. It seems like the place that gets the most notice. Like, that program is going to be at the top of the NCAA for a while.
I don't remember when Michigan hockey, have they always been, like, the Alabama of, like, college football? Like,
forgot about Red Savage. Tristan made a great point there.
It's, yeah, better. It's another good one.
Challenges Rutger. I still say, because Rutger actually sounds like an actual human being. Like, you can... That's where I'm giving the nod. Like, there's got to be a tier system here. Like, can you actually go to a restaurant and give them your name and they don't, like, go, what? Like, you could actually say Rutger McGroarty and they'll be like, all right, Rutger McGroarty, pencil you in. But, like, Red Savage, you know, you say that and they're going to, there's questions, there's follow-up questions to that. What are you doing? Is this your stage name? Like, you got to avoid those bad. If you can avoid those questions, you go higher on my list. All right. I'm
like just... McGroarty, though, because it sounds like a villainous frog in a children's cartoon. Rapper McGroarty. I don't know.
You nailed it. Okay. Where were we? What were we talking about?
I thought you were gonna throw a couple stats out there from our boys. Was it Jay Fresh?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we have.
We'll throw those in there because I know we're at like 40 minutes, so we gotta kind of.
Yeah,
reel
this
it in.
This is something where this conversation can go two ways. So of course, I want to get everybody's opinion on this, but we're talking about goals scored above expected for two reasons, Mike. And Jay Fresh shared this, you know, his data comes from Top Down Hockey, and then he shares it in a chart we could all easily digest. Of course, friend of the show, Jay Fresh. It's almost been a year since he's been on, Mike, so we might need to.
Oh yeah, bring him back.
Yeah. So here's what we're looking at, Mike. We are in the bottom third of the league in regards to the difference between the goals scored that we are our actual goals scored and what our expected goals say. So being at a negative, can everybody see my mouse? Being at a negative 5.9, you can see the worst team on this list is the Toronto Maple Leafs. So clearly they will gain some ground on that negative 18.7 at some point, and it's going to be scary.
Yeah.
But at the top of the list, you've got, you know, the Washington Capitals, Edmonton Oilers, Buffalo Sabres. Well, why did I say that? St. Louis Blues, Florida Panthers.
Who two of the upper elite here in the NHL?
So clearly there's names that belong at the top of this list. There's some names at the bottom of this list that don't belong. I mean, Tampa is right there with us, right at the bottom of this list. They are not a team that will stay at the bottom of this list. So the conversation is, especially with people saying, like, eventually the Red Wings will peter out. They will leave the playoff standings. They will be bounced out of the wild card. And again, I mentioned that earlier in the show. Take a look at those points percentage standings. Not as fun to look at. fall down pretty hard. So in that regard, we could either just talk about the points percentage, but that's where this conversation is. Do we truly, are we that far back talent-wise? Because look who else is at the negative 5.9, Mike. The Coyotes are actually better than us at negative 5.6. Are we the team that should be this far down? Or is that potential where you see, like, a Tampa Bay Lightning? There's a Toronto Maple Leafs are dead last on this table. Is there that potential where it just means the rest of the scoring will come along eventually? And that's where you look at the second line. And last night, even with Pugh Suter scoring, you saw so many juicy chances last night for that second line, and it just was not going in. I mean, did Zadina get, was it two or three Definitely odd man chances. I know he had one breakaway. It's just, God, it sails over the net. You see him slamming his stick on the ice. Like, clearly frustration is building for him because the chances are there and the pucks are not hitting the back of the net. I actually did tweet out last night. I said, the second line is truly elite. The back of the net just doesn't know it yet. I was pretty proud of that line, and I think I only got like 3 likes. That was top. Oh. You know, Mike, that was poetry right there. That was top level poetry.
Yeah, I meant to report
that. That's Robert Frost level, I would say.
Yeah, I meant to report that one. gosh. I mean, if you're rubbing elbows with, like, Tampa, who, they kind of have some, you know, I'm still missing my boy Cooch. I don't know. Ugh, this is a tough one because I feel like when our first line is out there, it's like, not statistically, but I expect so many goals. And for the rest of our 3 lines, I don't expect anything.
Yeah.
So I almost feel like it's kind of where I might expect them to be honest.
Right, because if you take a look at the list, like, individually, and you
outside of that Montreal game, there wasn't a lot of, you know, oh, we was robbed opportunities. Oh, look at that puck luck. It kind of felt like that's about where I thought the puck was going to go. You know, sailing into the glass behind the goalie, crashing into the board, hitting a defender on the other team.
Yeah, that's actually interesting because I mean that takes us in a whole different direction because I would still say I'm ready to like hold on. Like when I went through Evolving Hockey, a majority of our players are on the same side of the spectrum where they have a higher expected goals than the actual goals. So there's a ton of potential here for eventually that to even out and you can play the law of averages. But by the end of this season, there'll still be, like, I'm pointing at the table right now if you guys are watching. But there's going to be a similar table at the end of the season. Like, there's still going to be teams deep in the negative and, you know, high on the positive here for goals above expected, right? So that's the question. Is the talent level for our bottom nine, is that really what our expectation should be? And should mention, too, especially Tristan here. It does look like Mitchell Stevens, based on Blashill's words last night, is going to be out for a while. So even our defensive side of things will be going downhill. So we're going to have to figure out something on the fourth line center. Can I make a suggestion? Joe Valeno comes up and Michael Rasmussen just takes over the fourth line. And then we start scoring some goals in the middle six. Anyways, so that's where I'm looking at this. And I think there's hope for this number to go up. Actually, if you look at all of our players, anybody that is in the positive for this, Joe Valeno is one of those guys. So, if you want to play that game, if you either want to play the game, like, well, that this is a representation of good teams versus bad teams, then you bring up a Joe Valeno because he's also in the positive and you want to put a guy who's actually, scoring, you know, it's just barely in the positive, but it's a guy who's keeping pace with his expected goals. Or you're making the argument that eventually this team will just work itself out and get closer to zero at some point. And, you know, that could happen in one game, right? Like,
there's a pretty, I would say one other thing to connect with this too. For the most part, it looks like most of the teams in the first column are all doing pretty well with, like, the goal differential for the season cumulatively. And that's where the Red Wings, you kind of get nervous, and ours is kind of rough, even with a positive win-loss record. You know, we don't score tons of goals. Our top line's fantastic, but, you know, depth-wise, we all know that it's, you know, it's basically been like Namestnikov a little bit, so it kind of feels like I feel like we're right. I don't know, kind of right where we could be. Can I
surprise you with a couple of stats?
Hit me.
Even looking at this team, like the individual player, even Lucas Raymond has a better expected goals than goals going in. So you could make the argument, and again, this goes for like how much do you trust expected goal statistics? And I would say we lean pretty heavily into it. I think it's the best way. we have right now to estimate a team's ability to set up chances. I think this is the best way to look at that. But even a guy like Lucas Raymond, like there's still room in his game so far. Moritz Seider has a ton of space between his expected and goals for. And I think that's how, like, we can look at those two guys and say, yeah, there's enough talent there for that number to start to come together, get closer to zero. So I would say if those guys are on that list too, like Larkin is on that list, it just looks like right now your main guys that are pushing us in the positive, and a couple of guys I think we'd all agree, like eventually those goal scoring shot percentages are going to come shooting down, Bertuzzi and especially Namestnikov. So that it's a pretty, like, we've been winning and things we could make the argument of, like, ways we could jump into analyzing this team and saying, like, things should start to swing the other way. Like, even our goaltenders are middling. They're still average. And if we're only looking at two guys are overperforming the statistics right now in regards to Bertuzzi and Namestnikov, I would say, and I keep asking the question, but here's my answer. I think eventually we start to get more secondary scoring. I think, you know what? Let me show you this. I highlighted everybody on the team. This is for everyone to see right now. This is from Evolving Hockey. So these okay. are two different places to get this information. You're talking top-down hockey and Evolving Hockey. Actually calculate expected goals differently. But this still is a wonderful representation of how many guys have space to still score on this team. All of the blue names have room. That is a majority of our players have room to get more actual goals for, to catch up to the expected goals for. And that's,
can I say, even, look at, yeah. I love that Bertuzzi, I mean, he's sky high. I mean, how much more scoring could this effing guy do? But then also, Mark Stahl. I mean, for me, I'm, as Mark Stahl, I'm scoring about as well as I can do. So just kind of leave me alone, okay? This is peak Mark Stahl right now.
Yep. This is as good as you get.
I just love giving him grief. I'm sorry.
Who do we have on here? Just so everybody listening and not watching. Bertuzzi, Mark Stahl, Namestnikov, Mitchell Stevens, Troy Stetcher, and previously mentioned Joe Valeno are the only guys on this team that have a higher goals for than expected goals for their 5-on-5 statistics. So, yeah, that does mean our highest guys.
Everybody else has room.
Yeah.
For better numbers. Everybody else on the team.
And Podcast by George brought it up. He does think this team can compete for the rest of the year. He is leaning into the NHL is more a medical report than a game, unfortunately.
Yeah, especially during COVID healthy, here. Yeah.
Right. But that does actually go back to the Tyler Bertuzzi conversation as well. Like, still have a few Canada games to play that certainly have brought us down in that regard. Look at the two Montreal games. Of course, we have some room to grow in regards to getting more goals for than expected goals for. But I think if anything, we can at least look at this. And I wanted to have like a huge segment focused on this to kind of bring up the fact that if this team is for real, there's space for that to happen. If this team really does lack talent and we really only have three core guys right now, so let's say four. Wow. Then this will stay blue.
Six.
The rest of the six? All right, so.
Top line, Verano, Seider, Nedeljkovic.
Have we had long enough sample size for Verano? I'm not getting rid of them, but if I'm listing my core players right now, I threw in Bertuzzi, but yeah, Larkin, Raymond, and Seider. Those are my boys.
Man, where's Gustav?
Sorry. I know his dad listens, so I'd
mentioned the goose today. Yeah,
after his injury, his numbers have come down a little bit since he came back. I don't know if it's last night he played a good game, but before that it seemed like he was a little tentative, and the puck also just seemed to be bouncing right over his stick too. It's some puck luck, but some of that I think all gets rolled into like getting back into game shape. So I at this point wasn't in love with his couple of games since returning from injury, but he did play well last night, and I did like seeing him use his size too to protect the boys. I had to look up how tall he was. He's not a giant by any means, but Yeah, he's got some size to protect
the
little guys.
When you say the boys, do you mean his line mates or his tenders?
Yeah, just his tenders. Just. So yeah, I don't know if how deep anybody wants to go into the analytics, but again, there's at least evidence here that there's some space, and we know the guys to point out, right? Like, it's surprising to know that Lucas Raymond and Moritz Seider are also on that list where they expect or the goal the actual
yeah,
catch
it feels
up.
Feels like they're already far exceeding what you would ever expect from a rookie. You know what I
right.
mean?
So Lucas has like one goal to catch up. So a 2-goal game, boom, that's gone. You know, like, but Philip Sedina has a 7-goal difference. He actually leads the league right now in difference between expected goals for and goals for. So again, we've talked about it ad nauseum. Is it just about replacing that center position? Don't overvalue a Pugh Suter goal last night to say like, all right, he's back. Like, we got to go long-term with this. We need to see, you know, Zadina's playing with him. So there's some reason that Zadina's goals, actual goals for is 3 goals less than Pugh Suter's right now. Cause those are on ice statistics. Those are when they're on the ice together.
Yeah.
We got to figure that out. What the fudge is going on with Sedina? Cause Sedina and Fabry in lockstep, like around five, they're at 4.89 for Zadina, 5.77 for Robbie Fabry right now. Like actual goals for when they're on the ice. And Puse, he's got the 7.96. So I don't know. I don't know
what's
going
on.
I
guess we'll look at the two games coming up this week. And we can probably
We can wrap this up. We're going to be going into Columbus. Luckily, I would say luckily, this is something where we're going to be in the same situation, both having played last night, and then we'll both be playing on Monday. I guess it'll go a little more in Dallas's direction in that regards for the next game, because Dallas played when was their last game? Okay, so Dallas played last night, and they'll get one extra day's rest, and of course, we'll be playing two nights in a row. That is always one of those things where you watch the first period. The team that played the night before usually plays pretty hot in that first 10 minutes. And then the next 50 minutes will go the other team's way. I would say for a majority of back-to-back games, that's what happens. So keep an eye out for what the Red Wings can do to at least try and take the lead in that first period against Dallas. But yeah, it'll be one of those things if as we mentioned earlier in the show, if the playbook has been written on how to take a lead against the Wings and shut them down for three periods. If Washington did that, if Montreal also showed that it's possible for a team of their talent level, then, you know, I would say Dallas is at least as good. It's fair to say Dallas is at least as good as Montreal. So they would have that ability, I think, to play that game. So that's kind of where I'm looking at that Dallas game is kind of one of those things where I think we could easily beat Dallas if everything was the same, if we were on a level playing field and this wasn't back-to-back games. But that's where I think Dallas could take the win. So to back up and go to that Blue Jackets game, which again will be the first one that we play tomorrow, 7 o'clock in Columbus.
Is jumping on my desk and biting me. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I think it'll depend on what Columbus decides to do from their goalie perspective. I want to pull up their last game and see who played, because I think it was Merzlikins who lost to the Rangers. Yeah, so he gave up 5 goals, .878 save percentage. But over the whole season for Columbus, he's been outstanding. A .929 save percentage. Have 4.1 goals saved above average. So he's at the top of the list for the entire league. But as we've seen as of late, Mike, every team likes to play their backup goaltender or call up a rookie just for funsies to play the Red Wings. So is Korpisalo, who's got a sub 900 save percentage near the bottom of the league and goals saved above average. Is he going to get the start? And, I mean, some other stats to play in there is Korpisalo has actually played okay against the Red Wings the last couple of years. So even if that is the case, I don't want to say he's had our number, but he's played fine against us. I don't know. He steps it up. But I would say that's going to be a huge difference maker. Because if you take a look, take a look at the Blue Jackets. Bjorkstrand right now, 15 points in 12 games. Jakub Voracek, 12 points in 12 games. So Patrick Laine, is he actually out? He's only played 9 games so far this year. So,
yeah, he's killing my fantasy team.
Oblique.
Yeah, he's one of my 10th runners.
Laine is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. Oh, that's right. Whoops. So maybe there's, yeah, I mean, they've been losing now that he's out. So if we can hold on to that, yeah, maybe we get a win against Columbus, but yeah, then that next game for Dallas is, I still think depends on that first 10 minutes.
And, why do I have this selective memory that I feel like we've never won in Dallas before?
That can't be true.
I mean, it's not true. It's just that selective memory that like of these two games, I feel confident about a positive outcome Columbus wise, but not for Dallas. Even though Dallas is having kind of a rough year.
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about last week, why it was so important, like not important, but it would have been so cool for us to win those 5 games last week was because I looked at this next 4-game road trip as 4 winnable games, not easy wins, but that's where we were coming into this week. And I was going, all right, legit shot here. Cause then we have Vegas and Arizona after these 2 games, which we'll talk about in the next episode. But I mean, for sure an easy win in Arizona. Right? Like, I hope that doesn't turn into one of those games where we're like, we got this, and then it's 7-0 Arizona. It's not in Canada, so we should be fine. But I still think even with me looking at the talent level of these teams and Columbus's standings right now and their points percentage is better than us, I'm looking at those as like non-factors right now. But if you look at the talent level, you look at where the goaltenders are at, I think that, again, 2 winnable games in the next couple of nights. It's just, the important thing, I think, will be the non-analytic factors, the narratives. Detroit playing a second game in 2 nights against Dallas, I think, is going to hurt us. But Columbus's big thing will be who they're putting in net, is my opinion. Tristan does point out, he's Nedeljkovic has been absolutely unreal. Love him in net. He's actually leading all rookie goaltenders right now, Mike. So he's right up there with Mort Seider and Lucas Raymond for the Calder conversation.
I got a fun stat for you, Matt.
Yeah.
We played, was it 2 Montreal road games and 1 Toronto road game?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So if you take out the Canadian games, like Bertuzzi free away games, Red Wings are actually 3-1 on the road.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? We're a good road team, scrappy road team, I would say.
I know we got to make some wild leaps there, and when our very best player's not playing, and most teams can say that, you're going to lose if your best player's not playing. But yeah, that makes me feel pretty confident about Columbus. I'm kind of excited to see that game.
Yeah, I would say at least we have 4 games coming up where you can't look at any of them and just you're not dreading any of these games because you've got that depleted Vegas lineup coming in. And yeah, I think we're all looking forward to seeing what will happen against Arizona. And then we finally have some rest, Mike. I mean, coming on Matt's first week of work, schedule finally cuts back. Jesus.
So let's do this, Matt. What's your prediction win loss for this week?
We're doing the full week. We'll just do the next couple of games. Cause then we'll have Vegas and Arizona come up on the next episode.
Yeah. We'll do these 2 games then.
We're gonna keep the streak going against Columbus, so it'll be 5 out of 6, and then yeah, I think we will actually lose by we'll have a multi-goal loss. I still struggle to figure out how to say that, but I think Dallas will. It's not anything where I look at Dallas and I'm afraid of them. But I think it'll turn out to be the narrative side of things. And this is a lot of games for the Red Wings to play in a short amount of time. And eventually it's got to catch up. And I don't know. It just kind of seems like things will stack up in that game. I really, there's a shot here. Khudobin, Holtby haven't been amazing for Dallas. But there's still that space for Holtby to be Braden Holtby at some point and knock us out. So,
yeah, what's going on with Radulov? Oh, yeah, he's 35.
I love that.
Oh, God. You know what? We're going to lose a lot of faceoffs in Dallas. I forgot. This is Glenn Denning.
Yep, we're screwed.
Woo-wee.
God, if he scores a goal against us, like, seriously, can we just erase him from the history books if he screws us over? I'll say win-loss. We'll be 1-1 Monday and Tuesday.
I went extreme last week. I picked win, and we went win, the game I go to, loss, and then win. Met these two games.
Brad calling the backhander, by the way, for Glendening.
35, Radulov, and Glendening.
Oof. Oh, Chris is a huge fan of your comment, by the way.
Oh, which one?
The Radulov comment. Oh, he's 30.
Give me win-win, Matt. I think we're getting off my selective memory, Dallas Schneid here.
Whew. All right, so if you had asked me to pick all four games, I'm picking win-win for Vegas, Arizona. So if you get your way these first two games and I get my way the next
we're
two.
We're throwing those in, man.
This is, yeah. Man,
let's do
we're
it.
Too hyped. There's.
This is a good road team. Too much fandom. As long as it's not in Canada. It's a good road team.
Yeah.
Bertuzzi likes making people sad.
All right. Let's sail off into the sunset. Should warn everybody, I'm going to be recording some episodes for we're doing a family vacation coming up. So, we're not going
to
be going
live.
Not
looking forward to bringing a laptop on an airplane and recording in a Disney hotel room. Sorry.
I will be doing zero work from, I don't know, the day after Thanksgiving? No, probably Thanksgiving too.
Yeah, we're going to do some fun stuff, though. We're going to do some fun stuff, though, because we're going to try and find some centermen for this team for next season.
Yeah, we're gonna have some fun. We'll turn in the Mitchell Stevens work for you, Tristan. Finally, we'll have that ready to go starting Thanksgiving week and then moving into the first week of December. But then we'll be back that next week. But, yeah, we want to put – we'll do the Mitchell Stevens thing. We're going to look ahead to free agents for 2022 and 2023. And then we'll probably take a minute and look at all the prospects. But unfortunately, none of it's going to be live. We'll still be live for the next week. But just want to give you guys the heads up that right around Thanksgiving, there'll be a nice hefty break we're going to be taking.
We'll be there for you around Christmas, but Thanksgiving, sorry.
Yep. All right, everybody, we're going to sail off into the sunset. Hope you guys had fun. And we will, like I said, we'll still see you coming up later this week. All right.
Peace.